So this just happened also a couple minutes ago. Sorry to cut you.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it's from the Vegas Golden Knights. It's their press release. The general manager, Kelly McCrimmon, announced today that John Tortorella will not return to the team's coaching staff following this season with gone to the Stanley Cup Finals.
I really wish they would not release breaking news in the middle of the update.
Yeah, you know? There it is.
At least give me a couple seconds of buffer right before, you know?
We thank Torts for the guidance he provided our team since joining the organization back in March, said McCrimmon. When the decision was made to bring Torts to Vegas, we needed an immediate impact to help us at a pivotal point in the season. Torts' experience and leadership proved to be the boost that we were looking for, helping guide us to the Stanley Cup final. We're grateful for Torts' passion, sincerity, and commitment to our organization. We wish him and his family the best. Now, I don't know if John Tortorella took the job and said, I'm only doing this for the rest of the season, and then I'm gone. Or if typical with John Tortorella in his career, he wore out his welcome quickly enough, and then he's gone. I feel like he's coached a bunch of teams for not a long
tenure. Seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, well, there it is. I feel like there's more to this story, and we'll find out very soon.
Interesting.
Yep.
But what he did with Vegas was pretty incredible this year.
Okay, so was last night's Tiger game. Kind of wild and weird all at the same time. We'll start with the wild, weird stuff. The first thing is that the first 11 batters, the outs of the game were strikeouts. Not the first 11 batters, but the first 11 outs were strikeouts, which tied a Major League Baseball record. This is two teams, top of the first, three strikeouts, bottom of the first, three strikeouts, top of the second, three strikeouts, bottom of the second, two strikeouts, and then a ground out to first from Houston ended the streak. That was kind of weird. The Tigers scored 9 runs and struck out 18 times. That was kind of weird. The wild part, Colt Keith hit 3 bombs, hit a 2-run homer in the third to put the Tigers up 4-0. Then yanked one down the left field, or the right field line, rather, a 2-run shot to make it 8-3. And then in the ninth, popped one up out into the Crawford box there. That short porch and left, an opposite field shot to make it 9-3. What we can hope here is that Colt Keith is going through a wild correction factor. Let's start, Gator, though, with the 9 runs scored but 18 strikeouts. That you don't see every day.
No, you don't see that every day. It was quite remarkable to see that. But yet, when you're hitting the ball out of the ballpark with some regularity, albeit you don't expect Colt Keith to come up with a 3-home run night, but he did, you can live with that. 18 strikeouts is way too much swing and miss.
Yep.
9 runs to score, though, is way more than expected. You're scoring twice as much as you expect to, and you're probably striking out twice as much as you expected to. I don't think that's a recipe for what's going to happen the rest of the season. I think that was obviously a statistical anomalation. They had a pitcher they were facing last night that threw a wicked breaking ball. Also threw it all over the place. So it was either you stand up there, don't swing the bat, and you probably had a good chance to walk or get hit, or you're going to swing and miss.
And he did a lot of both. Yeah. Hit a lot of batters.
Hit 2 batters.
Yep. But the Tigers' offense was pretty good, and you know, the worst part about last night was more injuries. Troy Melton, a back, made him miss the start. Drew Anderson came in and did a good job, and I want to get to Drew here in a minute. But and then Gleyber Torres, and this sucks because he's a key contributor. You did the stat line comparison. Offensive stats between Gleyber Torres and Kevin McGonigal are really similar. If you love McGonigal, you're getting like another McGonigal at second base in terms of offensive production. Gleyber Torres has been really, really good for this team. And I don't know. It just looks like it's a re-aggravation of the oblique that kept him out a few weeks. And, you know, it's probable that it feels like he's probably looking at another stint on the injured list. I'm speculating, and I've been told years ago not to speculate on injuries, and I'm doing it anyway. But
if he's
it doesn't
out,
look good.
No, if he's out, and you're right, it didn't look good. It wasn't one of these things, say, hey, you want to take a couple swings, practice swings, make sure. No, he just immediately went to the dugout.
And it doesn't look good because it looks like it's the same injury.
Yeah, exactly. And re-aggravating that is problematic. He's been a very good player for this team. Was part of the resurgence we saw when the clock struck June. What? Calendar turned to June.
Yeah. Oh, the clock struck. That's great.
Clock struck June. When that happened, obviously he's part of the reason the Tigers were able to win some games because he is a quality hitter. He is literally an all-star. They need to have him on this team. But he left the game. Howie Lee came in, played second base, had a couple of hits. I don't know what Howie Lee is going to be the rest of the season with this team, but I like Howie Lee. I know you like Howie Lee. It's a rookie season. It's going to be lots of ups and downs, and got to be patient with that. But he'll get an opportunity if Glaber's going to be out. And yet, he's already on this roster. Now, if Glaber's going to miss time, then it opens up a roster spot. How will the Tigers fill that? And then you've got the whole separate issue of Jamai Jones and his failures. And does that open up another roster spot? Do the Tigers have two roster spots they got to fill?
Most likely, yeah. And
we're not even talking about Troy Melton, which might be a third.
Sure. And we don't know how serious that back injury is. We'll await updates today. As far as Torres is concerned, it could be Jace Young gets called back up. It could be Max Anderson, who is, you know, been a promising prospect down at Toledo, a second baseman, who at the beginning of the year when he was really hitting the ball, people were calling us and asking us, why isn't he getting called up? And there's two big reasons. One is he's not going to get called up to sit on the bench and play a part-time role. This is a guy that you have like full-time expectations for eventually being an everyday player. And so you want him to get as many at-bats and as much seasoning as you can at the, and that gets stunted if he calls up and plays once every 3 days, once every 4 days in Detroit or pinch hits here and there. So now, if you're playing must-win baseball down the stretch, you can stunt the growth for a month and a half and just bring him up because you're trying to, you got to win. But as in the here and the now, there's that, and there's the fact that he wasn't walking. Well, he started to walk. In fact, the time we looked it up, he had one walk the entire season. So he was doing one of the things that Scott Harris emphasized is the strike zone and being able to. But now he's walking more, right? So he could get called up. As far as Jamai Jones is concerned, look, he said it in code, but AJ, I thought, spelled it out on his morning show appearance last week. Jamai's got the Cleveland and the Houston series to start to produce. Every time he talks about him, he does what managers and coaches do. If a guy is on your roster, you support them, you back them. Even if you know the clock is ticking on that guy's roster spot, you support him and back him. Otherwise, you start to undermine their chance of success. He made it pretty clear why he was up for the Cleveland and Houston series. And every time he talks about Jamai, he says, but he's got to produce to make this plan. For the strategy to be productive, he's got to produce, and he's not. And he didn't again last night. And, you know, the bottom line here is, I don't be surprised if he gets DFA'd at the end of this week.
I won't be. I won't be surprised if he's DFA'd today. I just won't be, because he was 0 for 3 last night, two more strikeouts. Situations are to his advantage. He's facing left-handed pitching, which is the only reason he's on the roster, is to hit lefties. And he did an excellent job of it last year. But every game this year that gets played is another game where we're further removed from what happened last year. And this year he's not hit at all. He's hitting 144 on the season. He's not hitting lefties at all either. I don't think he's got a hit against righties. He only got like a dozen at-bats against right-handed pitching. It's time to move on. And you know, you got a guy like Corey Jolks in the minors who is not a stranger to getting a cup of coffee in the major leagues. He's 30 years old. His OPS on the season is 919, but against lefties, it's close to 1,000. He draws a bunch of walks, a 393 on base percentage. If you don't like that route, you can go bring Ben Malgary in there, and he's got an OPS of 944 right now, a 416 on base percentage. He's killing left-handed pitching as well. I'm only looking for a guy that's going to hit. I don't care about position flexibility because Jamai Jones wasn't position flexibility. You just need the right-handed bat. If Torres is going to go out and you're going to get a chance to bring up another bat, why not bring up Chase Young, whose on-base percentage is 115 points better than his batting average. He's got a 766 OPS and is hit for some power. He's got 10 home runs right now for Toledo. So they've got options at Toledo that they can bring up, even if they're not ready to bring up Max Anderson. If they want to see him season a little bit more before he gets his chance, I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem if Jamai Jones is going to stay on this roster past this series.
I don't expect it. With that said, Scott, a couple of looky here performances last night I want to get into and get your thoughts on. Then the latest on Dylan Larkin. Are things afoot? That at 12:30. It's Carson Anderson on 97.1. Doug Harsh, Scott Anderson, 97.1. Okay, couple looky here performances. What do you make of Drew Anderson these days?
Looky here.
Yeah.
I think Drew Anderson is an asset to this team. I think he's got a role to play on this team. And, I mean, throwing it to duty yesterday, it's not easy when you find out a couple hours that, hey, you got to start, by the way.
Yep.
But he's – I don't think he's great. I think he's a solid guy to have in the bullpen that can give you anywhere from 1 to 3 innings worth of work if you need it. Maybe more if you really need it, but I figure Ty Madden will be that guy. But Drew Anderson is, I think he's a nice piece to have on this team.
His first 10 appearances in Detroit with the Tigers, he gave up 11 earned runs. Since then, he has really settled down. He's given up 9 since in another about almost 20 appearances.
Almost 30 innings.
The performance yesterday, emergency break glass starting performance, was more than fine. To get him into the third inning, he gave up the one earned run, but struck out 5, which was pretty impressive, and has started to, I mean, fine coming in out of the pen too. He's been really pretty darn good with him. Not great in the Cleveland, the game he appeared in Cleveland. Is he also starting to resemble Goose from the original Top Gun with the little mustache? Is anybody else seeing that? Is it just me?
I'm not sure if you are so desperate to come up with a movie reference that this one fits your narrative, and thank God for you, or if you're actually right on this.
Well, I was watching last night and I'm like, who does he look like? He looks like, and it was racking my brain. I'm like, he's Goose from Top Gun.
There's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you that.
I think this is a mustache. I think that's the look the vibe I'm getting. The other thing is Tyler Holton. What are your thoughts on Tyler Holton?
Well, Tyler Holton has been a big part of this team in the past.
Mm-hmm.
He's a left-handed arm that they could use in clutch situations.
He went through a real rough stretch last month.
He did. Well, and his earned run average for the month of May was 3.46. It's 1.29 this June.
I'm going to bring up his game log because he went through a stretch where it was like he wasn't getting anybody out. 4 appearances against the Mets, Toronto, and 2 against Cleveland. He went 3-4 1/3 and gave up 1, 2, 3, 4 earned runs, gave up 7 hits. Yeah, he had a rough stretch there, but again, really good yesterday. I feel like if they could add a couple bullpen arms, and if are they going to be starters? Are they going to be repurposed starters? Is there going to be somebody from AAA? They're going to make a move. Because for this team to do anything, they just have to be better than they've been most of this year out of the bullpen. So I'm looking, man. I'm looking at Drew Anderson. I'm looking at Tyler Holton.
What scares me about the arms that may or may not be there at Toledo is they've gotten some chances with the Tigers, mm-hmm. and they've looked awful.
Yep.
And yet they've looked dominating at Toledo.
Like, Waga's back, who gave up the back-to-back home runs last night. Probably not an answer.
Who did that? I'm sorry.
Waga's back?
Yeah.
Jacob Waga's back?
Whoever that, who at Wagyu's back is, but yeah.
I might be in the ballpark.
But guys like Drew Sommers and Hanafy, those are guys that just look bad as Tigers, but look really good in the minors. So mm-hmm. you just don't know what you have. It's when guys get healthy, it feels like you're going to have a bullpen that has several options to go long innings out of the bullpen, as opposed to just, hey, you're a one inning guy. I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
Right. And then the other thing is, and we've kind of glossed over it. Kevin McGonigal is so good. He is so good. He, in many ways, he's exceeded realistic expectations for this season. Like, this is a case scenario where all the hype, as it grew and it grew and it grew, all appears to be worth it. mean, halfway through this guy's rookie year, and we had a caller call that said like seven things that we disagreed with, but the one thing he said was McGonagall's their best player. And I'm like, I'm not even sure if that's true, but he's in a conversation. And you can make a case, certainly. I haven't really sat down to go over it, but the home run last night, he added a couple of walks. He singled. He's on base all the time. His glove is fine, and they can hit him at leadoff.
Well, like for now, they can. I don't think that's where he slots when, you know, a couple of years from now when you probably have Max Clark leading off or if Parker Meadows gets healthy.
And produces.
But, yeah, but I mean, I feel like a Parker Meadows ship is sailed pretty much, and now that we haven't seen him in forever.
He's so steady Eddie. Not Parker Meadows. It was Kevin McGonagall.
McGonagall. I was like, Parker Meadows.
No, sorry.
As it gets, but McGonagall has been steady. He draws draws walks, mm-hmm. and he doesn't strike out. So it makes it look like he walks even more because he's not swinging and missing all that much. He's got, I think, is it 44 to 40 walks to strikeouts this year? He's hitting well. He's starting to get a little bit of that power stroke. Hit the home run last night. It was a no-doubter. He hit one last week. Was the same thing, a no-doubter. I think he's starting to get more and more comfortable with who he is in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And teams are going to figure out you cannot throw a fastball past him. Unless you elevate the fastball, he's going to hit it and hit it hard somewhere. He's got crazy good exit velocity. He's a complete baseball player. He runs well. He knows the game. If he makes a mistake, he doesn't make the same mistake twice. He learns from it. He's a lot of fun to watch, and you hope that he is the first of several players that play in a similar fashion. You know, it's funny because the two guys are linked together, always McGonagall and Max Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it seems like they couldn't be more opposite with personalities. McGonagall looks like he's this very humble kid, just going to be quiet, go about his business and do it. Max Clark looks like he's flashy. He's got all the flair and the necklaces and, you know, and maybe a little bit brash and dialed into social media and all that. But in the end, a real solid baseball player. And I'm looking forward to seeing Max Clark come up, Bryce Rainer, Yost is the other one who's they got it at single A ball. Both of Yost and Rainer are shortstops. We'll see how they matriculate, but they're hitting reasonably well. OPS is like 750 for both of those guys.
At the beginning of the year, when like AL Rookie of the Year odds came out, McGonagall had a chance. It was clear that he was going to be one of the favorites to win American League Rookie of the Year. We went back and we said, well, remember who won last year's American League Rookie of the Year? It was Nick Kurtz from the Athletics, and how elite he was as a rookie. And we said, imagine if you plug this bat into the Tigers lineup. That was the if everything's working out. Well, Kevin McGonagall's batting average is in line with Nick Kurtz. His home runs, he could hit as many as Nick Kurtz. His RBIs, he could have as many as Nick Kurtz. Now his OPS isn't nearly as high. Kurtz last year hit .293 with 18 home runs, 57 RBIs, and a 1,006 OPS. McGonagall's .282, 5 home runs, 25 RBIs, .811 OPS. So he could do many of the same things Nick Kurtz did, and that was our best case, wildest dream scenario. And he's trending to maybe be exactly that. It's crazy.
Yeah, he won't have the power that Nick Kurtz has, but he's awfully good. Both players are awfully good. They'll be happy with either one, but I'm glad we have McGonagall. McGonagall he's been great. I mean, defensively, it looks like he's gotten better and better defensively, whether he's playing shortstop.
Plays
or
a more
third.
Important position than Nick Kurtz in terms of defense. He steals more bases than Nick Kurtz, and he's got to keep it up, right? Yeah. I mean, but God, it's been so good. It's been so good. And for this team to have any chance, he has to keep it up. And for the people going, why are you even doing this? Look, what the Tigers are up against are a bad American League. They're chasing 500. The last AL playoff team right now in the wild card has a 500 record. It's the Athletics. There's a chance that 500 can get you in. And do I think this team that has had good starting pitching and on paper should be better moving forward? Do I think with a correction factor, when it takes place with a case like Cole Keith, if it takes place with Torkelson, could lead to some hot bats coming up and maybe is happening right now with Cole Keith? Chasing 500 isn't an insurmountable task for this team in this group. But that would be to just get them in. Now, to do more than that, than to just get in, they might have to buy at the trade deadline. But that's why, in a very early default position, I'm either buy, and if you can't buy, sell. Because just getting in, You got to just get in with improved roster. And we'll see if they can accomplish any of that. All right. Speaking of trades, there's always Dylan Larkin reporting. It feels like everybody around the league is talking about it. Hear the very latest next here on Carson Anderson on 97.1. All right, so yesterday Gator was off. He was out there shooting a scorching 81 at the Detroit Golf Club at the Rocket Classic Media Day.
Scorching. We're on the shorter course, but yeah.
Whatever. Well done. But you were playing in the media event. Stoney was in. I want to get caught up on a couple things with you.
Okay.
One, did you watch the United States men's soccer team game on Friday night?
I turned it on late in the first half, and I caught the third goal of the game, which was a really nice goal. Yep. And I left it on as background noise.
Okay.
So I look up occasionally. I did have it on, yes.
Cool. Were you entertained? Were you like, okay, is there anything that will make you go back for our next game?
The only thing that makes me go, because here's the truth. So then over the weekend, because the cool thing about the World Cup is that all the games are spaced out. There's
always a game on.
There's always a game on.
In fact, there might be one now.
I think there is. So it's cool that there's always a game on, even if you don't have any rooting interest, whatever. The other thing that's cool is that the games are all in 4K.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm a 4K snob because yep. There's just not enough that's broadcast in 4K. And if I finally get a chance to watch it, then I will. It's a function that is not normally utilized on the TV.
Yep.
So if I can, I will. And I'll put it on as background noise if I'm not watching anything else. But so I did catch more soccer than I thought I would over the weekend. All told, maybe an hour's worth.
Okay.
It doesn't. It doesn't really. It still doesn't appeal to me. It's too slow of a game. And so no.
So I want this thing to be successful, and I want people to care, but we're not going to force it down your throat. But to have us win a 4-1 game is better than some of the results we've seen in other games. Yesterday, it was exciting because there were some surprise results. I mean, Spain's supposed to win this whole thing, and they tied Cape Verde 0-0. And the Cape Verde goal or Cape Verde goalie was out of his mind. They fired 27 shots at him. Now, not all of them were on goal, and some punch-aways that might not have been on net, but he was out of his mind to make that really interesting. But I'm not forced it down your throat. I'll be intrigued if you get to go back, and if you do go back and watch a game against Australia Friday afternoon.
Yeah, I might. If I'm around watching TV, it's not appointment viewing for me, but okay. I'm not against it where I'm absolutely not going to watch it. It's just,
you're not as hostile.
No, I'm not hostile.
We got a text yesterday from a listener that said the people that hate soccer are very proud that they hate soccer. And, you know, I told you I went to that friendly where there were 70,000 people there that were loving every second of it. I watched in a bar, Kang, that was your idea that you thought soccer might be a better bar viewing experience. I watched at Connor O'Neill's in Ann Arbor. The place was packed and everybody was going crazy. It was way more fun than watching at home.
Yeah, so. I think it'd be a great bar sport to watch. Yep. And like I said, I did watch some of it. I don't know if Paraguay is terrible or if the United States played awfully well. I mean, everybody seemed to say
we're supposed to win.
I caught like 30 seconds of commentary afterwards, and Alexei Lawless is like, "This is the best I've ever seen this team play." And okay, good to know.
Well, based upon previous results, it feels like they either overachieved or Paraguay played terrible. I know their keeper had an incredible wingspan. And I found a really cool fact that I thought you'd like. His dad was a keeper and his nickname was Gato.
Oh, cat.
Yes. So apparently this guy is named Gatito.
Is it son of the cat?
It's kitten.
Oh.
So that's his nickname.
Oh, no.
I might have said that wrong, but that's.
Yeah.
And I immediately regret it. The other thing I wanted to get caught up on is your reaction to the news that Jay Batt was leaving Michigan State yesterday.
Well, this has been in the works for weeks, if not, I think I first heard the rumor of this, it feels like a month ago, that this was going to be the case. If Gus Kowitzka was going to be on the way out, the president of the Michigan State, the rumors were he was going to leave and that would open the door for Jay Batt to leave. Then Guskowitz announced he was going to go to Clemson, although I guess technically it hasn't happened yet, but Batt was going to leave. And everybody said, from what I've read about, thought that he would just waiting for an opportunity to get back to the SEC. Initially, I thought, well, this can't be good. You know, it's another change with Michigan State. And you know, this is a guy who I thought was helping to get the transition from Michigan State into the right place. But more I've read about this, and then you're seeing reaction from Izzo and from others, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world that Jay Batt is leaving. The impression I got from reading some stuff on Spartan Mag from Jim Comperoni, who covers Michigan State athletics, is that people in the room weren't all that upset that Jay Batt would leave. If this was inevitable, he was going to do it anyway, then better do it early than later, right? Go ahead and go. And then it opens up. Anytime you talk about athletic directors at Michigan State, the Mark Hollis conversation comes up. Mark Hollis was outstanding as an athletic director at Michigan State. Unfortunately, his tenure ended with the Nassar scandal that really had almost nothing to do with Mark Hollis, but he kind of fell on his sword and walked out on his own terms. And that was the case back, whatever it was, 8 years ago. And ended up hooking up with Rocket and becomes one of their marketing directors, specific with the golf tournament. And it tied in brilliantly yesterday because Mark Hollis is up there yesterday at the media event and he's talking with the media.
So did you talk to him?
I didn't get a chance to talk to him too much, but I saw I was talking with Brad Galley, and Brad Galley had talked with him, and Larry Lage of the Associated Press had talked with him, and I saw the videos and all that. And I was hoping that they were going to ask him about the Michigan State situation. And much to my joy, it seems like Mark Hollis is not opposed to coming back to Michigan State. In fact, he welcomed the conversation right now. Maybe you couldn't have said that a couple of years ago, but now he's in a place where, yeah, he loves Michigan State, loves the university. His best friend is Tom Izzo, or one of his best friends is Tom Izzo. And the working relationship that they had was very successful with the football program and the basketball program specifically. We know the hockey program is going really well right now as well. The thought that he could come back to Michigan State would be great to me. But it would come at a cost because it's going to dredge up all the Nassar stuff again, which, again, I think is unfair for him. But would he want to go through all that? And he knows it. Like, he knows that that's going to be brought up if he does. So I thought it was interesting that what he said yesterday was he's open to the conversation. He'd like to have the conversation. So we'll see where this goes for Michigan State. As far as Jay Batt, don't let the door hit you. You want out, get out. Go. Leave.
Feels like the reaction I've seen, people are more upset about Guskowitz than they are the president leaving than the athletic director.
Yeah, because Guskowitz is leaving because of a disagreement there, or not being able to get along with the board of trustees, with the two or three members of the board of trustees that are really creating some issues. He's trying to get everybody on the same page, and some of these trustees don't appear that that's what they want to do. So losing him hurts. And I'll defer to Tom Izzo. When Tom Izzo says he doesn't like that Guskowitz is leaving, okay, I'll agree with you. Then I don't like it. So I don't know when they're going to hire a new president, how long that's going to take, who the interim president's going to be, when that announcement comes down. I don't know. It's a bit of a mess at Michigan State right now, but I don't think that they should be without somebody of substance as an athletic director for too long.
Well, one of the consistent things we talk about and seem to be is how do you make the best of a bad situation? And, you know, maybe they can find the right people that just put a rudder down, put an anchor down and quit the boat rocking, and which is what I've asked for Kyle Whittingham to do. Just put a rudder down. And but, yeah, I mean, if you can, if it makes you look long and hard and make sure that the next appointments are long-term appointments, Because the one thing that presidents and athletic directors, they come in and they start initiatives and then they bolt before they ever see them come to fruition. It feels like, you know, that's bogue.
Right. Right. And the big thing with Michigan State right now is getting the Spartan Ventures NIL thing going. And the guy who heads that up seems like he's really encouraged to get some more freedom to get that thing rolling the way that he wants it to with Jay Batt out of the picture here. So we'll see how that develops. I mean, that's the next step for college athletics, really, is how to navigate through this world of NIL.
Okay. Coming up, phone calls, feedback. Also, an unbelievable Detroit Tigers statistic. We will get to that today at 105. It's Carson Anderson here on a Tuesday. You can stream the show with the Odyssey app. Make sure you do that when you're out of town. I've done it a lot lately. Also through our website, 971theticket.com. 971.